Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com on what we are told is a Thursday night. Very sunny down here, told it's raining up in Scotland. Well, this evening I'm pretty confident that we're going to be having a conversation, live conversation hopefully by Skype with Annie Day, who is a complementary therapist that I've known for many years. Indeed, she is probably responsible for me being as well as I am. She's certainly sorted out a fair few things for me in the past, some of which I think we'll probably be hearing about. But as well as helping her own clients and friends, Annie's actually worked in hospices and prisons and women's refuges and psychiatric units, as well as with young offenders and various other places as well. Even more remarkably, I think, she's been active in introducing GPs to some of the wonders of alternative methods of healing, including one of my favourites, kinesiology, which is what hopefully we will be starting with. I think I know a lot of complementary practitioners, and a lot of them are really good at what they do, but Annie's especially good at looking into what it is that makes some of these things work and how to make them work better, and is keen to inform us about some of the scientific backing for the therapies she uses. And we've managed to round Annie Day up from the green room, get her off the pastries and the G&T, and I think she should be with us. Are you there, Annie Day?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, very good. That's better. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, if you're actually close to the mic, that sounds really great. Thanks very much for joining us here on People's Internet Radio. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, very much. I'm absolutely delighted to be talking to you this evening.
Well, it's really great. Obviously, I'm looking to chat to you a bit about your experience and the more solutions we can offer to help people kind of keep themselves healthy in this difficult world, the better.
Absolutely.
So how did you get yourself involved in complementary therapy? I assume you had some experiences with the Not Healthy Service first, did you?
Oh, absolutely. the universe gave me a bit of a curved ball in 1998. At that time, I'd been a special needs teacher in a nursery school and primary school for approximately 20 years. And one of my colleagues was going to demonstrate a star jump from a vaulting horse. And she was 7.5 months pregnant. So I very rightly said, that's not a good idea. I'll do it. And what we didn't know was that the crash mat had got a tear in the lining. So when I demonstrated the star jump and actually landed on it, it moved, which meant that my coccyx and my pelvis crashed into the hall floor at a rate of knots, and I broke both my coccyx and my pelvis.
That's hell of a stunt, mate.
Gifted, absolutely. However, I have to say it was, this may sound bonkers, but I'm going to say anyway, it was probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. It got me onto the complementary therapy path, which I'd have still been a teacher in a special needs school, and I wouldn't be doing all the extraordinary things that my life's actually, turned into this absolutely miraculous thing where I do everything that I love to do and get very well paid for it. So what actually happened was I went to the NHS, and they gave me lots of painkillers that my body couldn't tolerate. And they then said that the best they could offer me was for me to go to pain management clinics. At the time, I couldn't walk, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't sit down. In fact, I couldn't do anything that I used to do prior to the accident. And I basically came out of the doctor's surgery and had a tantrum to the universe and my guides and everybody that was passing by and ranted completely out of control, because at the time I was 44 and I'd been told by my GP that the best they could do was for me to go to these pain management clinics, and I was in such a mess, you know, emotionally, physically and every other way. And fortunately, the universe heard me, my anguish, and sent a friend to walk past just at the time when I was ranting and screaming and crying, and said, oh, you just need to see my acupuncture friend. You know, I had a similar diagnosis a few years ago, and I've been great ever since I've started having regular acupuncture.
This for a broken pelvis and stuff?
Yeah.
Really? Wicked.
Yeah. And literally, I went to see him. He's become a great friend since 1998, and We do energy swaps once a month, and it's really lovely. But at the time, he was married, and the lady he was married to, not only did I get extraordinary acupuncture, which was amazing. After the first session, I could walk. After the second session, I could sit down comfortably or relatively comfortably. And I can't tell you how relaxed and at peace I felt. But every time I went to see Victor for my acupuncture, he would say, oh, my wife, Sally, suggests that you use this specific essential oil or this, read this book. And he turned me on to all sorts of people like Candice Pert, The Molecules of Emotion, and obviously Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And literally, it was life-changing in the most extraordinary way. Because I'd been made redundant by the same school that I was injured at, 7 days after I was injured. In fact, it was as soon as my sick note went in that said I wouldn't be fit to work for 6 months. And the our head teacher had gone off sick with stress. So I was selected on the grounds that they'd have to pay sick pay, but they'd also have to pay for a supply teacher to cover for me. So I was selected. And I later went on, 12 months later, to win a case of unfair dismissal.
I should hope so.
Oh, it's just ludicrous, isn't it? You can't get rid of someone just because it's cheap. Basically, that's unless you've written that in your in all the setup for the school and you say that that's the criteria on which you'll select people for redundancy, it's actually illegal. So wonderfully, I won a case of unfair dismissal, and all I had was the lady from the CAB, which I have to say, Citizens Advice Bureau at the time, did an absolutely fantastic job. And we were up against Walsall Metropolitan Borough Council's whole legal team, and we still won. And it was incredible because they kind of invented this whole story around it, and I was able to be very honest, and whatever questions I was asked, I didn't need to refer to my notes because I'd lived it and breathed it. And I was really blessed that at the time my sister saw a job at a women's refuge, and they wanted either a special needs teacher or someone who'd had similar experience to work as a children's worker with survivors of domestic violence and their children. And I became the children's worker at the Pathway Project and worked there for in total 6 years. And I have to say, it was extraordinarily healing for me because I too am a survivor of domestic violence as a child. So it was extraordinary for lots of reasons, and not least that I could really help the women and children because I'd literally got the T-shirt. So after that, after the 6 years, we lost the funding from Children in Need. And at the same time, my grandma was diagnosed with cancer, basically, and she was 99 and decided that she didn't want radiotherapy or chemotherapy. She wanted me to nurse her, and I was, you know, I was happy to do that. I started my life with my grandma. I actually lived with my grandma till I was 5, so it was fitting that she'd chosen me. Of everybody that she wanted, that she could have chosen from, she actually chose that I would be the person that would help her. And it was such a positive experience because she turned down the offer of chemotherapy and radiotherapy, saying, I want quality of life, not quantity of life. And she was an extraordinary woman. She was one of the original suffragettes and part of the suffragette movement, but she was one of the first female head teachers in Birmingham, which was quite unusual at the time. They were usually male. And she was the head of a special needs school, but she was also an exceptional complementary therapist as well. And so because I spent the first 5 years of my life with her, I actually watched her making poultices, her own teas, all sorts of herbal medicine.
And presumably she got that because she's of a generation that was using that more or less before the NHS turned up. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt. And I think you know, she would have been really shocked at the way that the NHS has turned out. This isn't quite the picture that Anara and Bevan had when he first introduced it, I'm fairly sure.
No, well, when it first arose, I think they were basically, wasn't it built around 5 homeopathic hospitals, and one of them was in Birmingham, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
Oh, that's pretty. Your original injury. I'm not entirely surprised that the NHS had no solution to it, but it is astonishing that with that kind of injury, that two treatments of acupuncture should basically get you back up and about again. That's remarkable.
I know, it really was the most incredible. I mean, I would attribute some of it to the very long consultation that acupuncturists do right at the start, which is critical, isn't it, with any healing. You need to know, you need the person to unpack everything so you know exactly what's going on in their life, rather than just treating one condition. And I think I had a 2-hour or 2.5-hour consultation where he asked me about everything and anything, some of which seemed relevant and some quite frankly didn't. But actually what he came up with was extraordinary. He used a herb called moxie that he placed in my navel after filling my navel with salt, and then put moxie in and burnt that, and then used all the acupuncture needles. And it just was, well, life-changing, completely life-changing. And literally at the same time, both of our children had gone to Australia to work on a conservation project. So they'd left in the January. So that was a big shift and change in my life, that I suddenly hadn't got dependent children. It gave Terry and I a real new lease of life. We were back to being the young couple that we were at the beginning of our relationship before we had any children.
I think you still are, from my meetings with you.
Thank you. For us it was lovely because we got to know each other again, and I think we spent a lot of our time concentrating on getting our kids through some of their dilemmas and things like that. So yeah, it was extraordinary. And after my grandma died, I think the next bit of the journey that really got me onto this path brilliantly was that I'd said to a friend on a particular Wednesday, I think what I'm going to do is open my own company here, and I'm going to call it Heaven Sent Bliss. And I'm going to volunteer at the local hospice because I know that all the skills that I've learnt would be really useful to help other people who are suffering from life-limiting illnesses. And, you know, I learnt a lot about very natural painkillers and what works and what doesn't from the NHS stuff that was being used as well. So I'd literally said to her, I want to volunteer at our local hospice and I'll go at the end of this week. And she phoned me up the next night and went, "Any day, I've just found the most amazing job for you. It's got your name on. It's at Compton Hospice, which is Wolverhampton, which is only about 8 miles from me. And they wanted a complementary therapist that had worked with vulnerable adults, that was qualified in aromatherapy, reflexology, Indian head massage and Reiki." And I went for the interview and basically got the job, which was extraordinary because they had already said that there was an internal candidate that had been doing the job for some considerable time. And so I kind of chilled out at that point and thought, oh, well, you know, the internal candidate will get it because they've been doing a really good job for this length of time. So I was really surprised in the afternoon when they phoned me up and said, "No, we've decided that we want to go with you. Everything that you said, you know, it ticked all the boxes for us." So some time later, I'd been training the doctors in complementary medicine because without the knowledge of what the complementary therapies could do, they weren't making any referrals. So I called a lunchtime seminar, invited all the doctors to an introduction to aromatherapy. And they turned up all ready to shoot me down in flames. Any research that I had, they were all quite prepared to put in their counter argument. And I didn't do that. I just spent 5 minutes talking about the qualities of aromatherapy and then paired them up, gave them a hand towel, distributed aromatherapy oils, and literally taught them how to do a hand massage on each other straight away. Now, you can you can counter argue anything that I say about aromatherapy. You can completely ignore all the research and, you know, do that. But you can't deny what's happening to all your senses. So actually, that experiential learning session was the best thing I could have done, because literally that day, there were loads of doctors coming to me and saying, I can't believe how good I feel now. And all I've done is have a 15-minute hand massage. You know, if you can tell me more about comp therapies, I'll make sure that the patients are getting them, because I'll recommend them. And actually, it's the best thing I could have done. It really was.
Did you give them a variety of aromatherapy oils to play with? Or?
Yeah, I did indeed, yeah. I gave them about 6 different blends. They were already blended with grapeseed oil, because I was very conscious that often aromatherapists use nut oils, like jojoba and sweet almond are the most commonest. And if you've got a nut allergy, because your skin is your biggest organ in the body, you could still experience anaphylactic shock.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. And also, I never use wheat germ oil for exactly the same reason. If you've got a problem with wheat and gluten, then me putting wheat germ oil as your carrier oil is going to be really difficult for your body to cope with.
And yet, that's quite a common practice, is it?
It is indeed, unfortunately. And I teach for 2 colleges, as you know. So all of my students, I tell them to use grape seed oil. Not to be confused with rapeseed, obviously.
No, the rapeseed's dreadful, isn't it?
Oh, terrible stuff. It's genetically modified and has been genetically modified 3 times. And it's really not good for us at all. And the fact that they're sliding it into lots of food as well is also problematic, particularly in Staffordshire, the area I live in, because you're not only breathing it in because of the pollen from the rapeseed, but also it's been slid into, you know, what you would think would be fairly healthy food. So things like guacamole, dips, hummus, things like that, that you wouldn't expect it to be in. And they don't now label it as rapeseed because they know we're getting wise to that. So they just put it into as vegetable oil. And if you if it says vegetable oil, then it's 99.9% likely that it's going to be genetically modified rapeseed. So, yeah, not good, really.
Oh, they're a canny bunch, aren't they?
They are indeed. It's so sad that Monsanto's doing all these dirty tricks, but it's not helpful at all.
So, have you any idea how aromatherapy works? What are the what's the sort of physiological means by which it changes? Because I know scent's really important to us, isn't it? I find it's really
absolutely
good for recall and bringing back almost whole memories of things. Just the whiff of scent.
Absolutely, without a doubt. It's said that by the time we're 18, we can differentiate between 120,000 different fragrances. And for the majority of those fragrances, there will be an emotional context. So to give you an example of it, every time I smell cinnamon, I'm back in my grandma's kitchen. I'm a 4-year-old little girl and the birds are singing, the sun's shining. And every time I smell cinnamon, I get that whole encapsulated memory. And it's so vivid, it just takes me back. So what we do with aromatherapy when we've done a massage is I let my patient sense of smell choose their oil. So I'll make suggestions based on what's on their consultation sheet with their goals and their concerns, and also anything else that they need to tell me about. And then I'll suggest ones, but I will always ask them to smell it. If they like the smell, it will be far more potent than one that I choose that they don't like the smell of, because it does have this emotional context. And then after they've had their massage, obviously they'll have smelt the oil and they'll have felt really relaxed and at peace and literally experienced heaven sent bliss. Then I give them a 10ml bottle of their unique blend to take home and use. And basically, it makes their massage last a lot longer, because every time they use it, either in their bath or for a massage at home, or they put it on their pulse spots or on their pillow, every time that they smell that again, their mind will go, ah, what was I doing the last time I smelt this? Oh, yeah, I was really relaxed and I was having a massage. So it's a way of helping people not to be overwhelmed by stress, even after their appointment.
Oh, that's really clever, that is, isn't it? So you get extra value for one massage.
Yeah, and people really appreciate anything like that that you can do that extends the benefit for longer. It's got to be a good thing to do. And I recommend all my students to do the same thing, because for how much oil it uses and the really massive benefits for your client, it's just not worth not doing it, to be quite honest.
Mm. And also explains to me why incense is so relaxing. I mean, and some of them aren't, of course. Some of them are really aggressive, but some of the natural incenses are such a great way of clearing a room and clearing your head of any grief you've been experiencing.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. It's a really good way of getting rid of stagnant or negative energy, as you say. It's a really lovely way of doing that.
And it's not expensive either, is it, that? We can all do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. And what I tend to tell my students is that don't go to Body Shop and Boots to buy your carrier oils, because you'll be ripped off by the fancy packaging. If you go to a reputable supermarket, get organic grape seed oil. If it's food quality, so it'll be with all the other cooking oils. If it's food quality, then it's good enough to go on your skin. So, and it'll be probably about an eighth of the cost of, the flashy bottle from Boots or Body Shop or wherever. It's just worth knowing.
What about coconut oil?
Coconut oil is extraordinarily beautiful and lovely. It's got so many benefits. It's a natural antifungal. It's very, very good for oil pulling, which heals the gums. So if you've got a fungal nail infection, you can massage it into the bed of the nail. You can use it to treat thrush, either orally or internally. And it's very rich in 3, 6, and 9. You can cook at quite high temperatures with it, and it doesn't oxidize at all. And I've made a great discovery recently within the last few weeks, in that it's great for putting on your sweet potatoes. It tastes divine.
Well, it makes sweet potatoes taste even better.
Yeah.
Oh, wicked. Here, we've got the first comment in the chat box here. Well, a couple, actually. VMD says that he's put the word anchors in, presumably to refer to the kind of smell attached to the massage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we've got Captain Stingray. He's in there. I wonder if you can do anything for him. He says, every time I smell cinnamon, it reminds me of a bastige bully who lived down the road and always robbed my bun off me, still traumatised till this day.
Oh, yeah, you need to go to another smell, because unfortunately, once it's locked in for good.
Right.
That's the downside of it, I guess. It's why some people, I've had patients before now who've suffered from acute migraines, and they've got a real aversion to lavender, and the reason is that they have used it to control or subdue a headache, and it's not worked, and they've vomited. So when they smell it, they get the experience to that vomiting, which isn't particularly helpful at all. So literally, when I get anybody that wants to overcome migraines using aromatherapy oils, I'll suggest jasmine, because it's not been overused for most people. But because this has been known about, the lavender's been known about for a long time, and it's so easy to get hold of, then, just moving the person to a different oil can make an absolutely massive difference.
It's such a shame, isn't it, that they've had the smell of lavender removed from their beneficial list, as it were, because I find it really helpful, lavender. I use it quite a lot.
Yeah, and I think the unfortunate bit as well is that we have things like these dreadful plugins that are just horrible.
They do smell vaguely like what they're supposed to smell like, but they always seem a bit aggressive to me.
They do, and it's man-made fragrances. It's not lavender essential oil, so
it's synthetic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that you're smelling that all the time, as an airborne particle, isn't good for you, really. So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. If you want to use something that's better, I use the little oil lamps, and literally just put a couple of drops of my favourite oil in, or the one I want to use on that day, and then I'll add water to it, put a little tea light on, and that's much better. And also, the fire brigade locally have been telling lots of people not to use the plugins because actually they sometimes cause fires just because they get really hot on their plastic.
Do they really?
Yes.
I think they're full of they're full of neurotoxins as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're just horrible. So really, if you can use something that's more natural to fragrance, as you say, incense, or using essential oils in a little oil lamp, you know, they do all kind of ones, from ceramic ones to really pretty metal ones. So, yeah, you could choose, you know, an oil lamp to match your decor, whatever that particular thing is. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had that. I've got an unfortunate anchor with a smell, which goes back to my teenagehood when I had some unfortunate incidents on Southern Comfort, and I swear I can smell a bottle of Southern Comfort opening on the far side of a barn.
Well, that's the reason that Heaven Sent Bliss, I only ever make my essences with vodka. Because my beloved, when he was 15, got very, very, very drunk on a bottle of brandy. Him and his friend sunk a bottle of brandy between them and were hospitalised with alcohol poisoning. So literally, any essences that are made with brandy, as soon as he smells that, it evokes that terrible memory of how really poorly he felt. So I make all mine with vodka, just in case he needs to take them orally. And at least then he won't be having an adverse reaction to it straight away. So, yeah, unfortunately, that is the downside of our limbic system. And the limbic system is the emotional part of the brain. It's situated at the front of the skull. So basically, if you can avoid a particular fragrance that you know causes that kind of negative reaction, then, you know, that's pretty good, really. And sometimes just finding one that's the other end of the spectrum, like lime or sweet orange or something like that, can really make a difference. And also, you're breathing in vitamin C as well, which is not a bad thing either.
So get an extra bit of benefit from that. It's strange, isn't it? Because brandy is used in the batch flower remedies and things like that. It's quite a common spirit, isn't it? I've often wondered why they use that instead of vodka.
I know. I make flower essences myself, and tree essences and situational essences. So I go to a sacred site and make an essence. And I've always thought that it wasn't right to use brandy, because brandy has such a strong taste, but also such a very strong fragrance. So if it's a subtle flower remedy that you're making, let's say we're using jasmine flowers, you really want to get the taste and the fragrance of the frankincense, of the jasmine. You don't want to be smelling and tasting brandy. That always seems a little bit bizarre to me, but as Dr. Back's very good at making them, I've got to just, let it go. That obviously that's the way he thought was best. And I have heard of people using all sorts of extraordinary alcoholic beverages to make them. The funniest one, I think, for me was a friend who made her essences. She'd got no brandy, she'd got no vodka, and wanted to preserve this particular essence that she'd made. And so she used cherry brandy. And I'm sure that nothing would, you'd be able to smell nothing other than the cherries in that, I'm sure.
I suppose, though, if you really like the cherry brandy, why not? I mean, I was delivering some batch flower remedies to Mama recently, and we didn't have anything to preserve it with. She didn't have any brandy, but she really likes her whiskey, so I just topped it up with whiskey, and of course
that'll do it. Yeah.
Do you want to say a bit more about the oil pulling? Because I think that's another really potent and simple and cheap method, and one that I use myself.
Yeah, sure. They reckon that if you if you want to increase your gum health, basically, and there is a very strong link that's been very well researched over the years, that there is a link between gum disease and heart disease. And so one of the things that they're suggesting, because the benefits that we've talked about with the coconut oil earlier, it's antiseptic, antiviral, antifungal. So what they suggest you do is that you get either organic coconut butter or organic coconut oil, and basically you just keep swishing it round your gums. For the recommended time is 17 minutes, but you can do it for longer, I'm sure, and I don't think it would matter. But basically, the idea is that it's swishing around your mouth, and it's actually just addressing any problems that are there, but also it can just rebalance and alkalise your mouth so that it's not so acidic, and so it's not such a good place for bacteria to grow. So it's just a really easy, and you know, 17 minutes a day is no big deal, is it really? It's not like hours of having to do a particular thing. And for the benefits, I've got patients who've had really bad gingivitis, and actually it's cleared it up within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of doing the oil pulling. And the NHS stuff they were taking just wasn't touching it at all. So clearly, you know, that's a really good way of addressing it.
It really, really worked well for me. I mean, for years I had trouble with infection. I've got really chronic teeth. I'm hoping to have them removed shortly, I must admit. Yeah. But they were, for maybe 3 days out of every five, they were painful, they were sensitive, I couldn't chew on them, they were getting abscesses and infections. And I started doing the oil pulling, and within 2 days, it all went away. Absolutely remarkable. But the reason why I started doing it was I read about it on an Ayurvedic website on the internet, and it told me that all of the blood in my system travels through my gums in that 17 minutes, and that the oil pulling not only cleans your mouth up but detoxes your blood. Is that right?
Wow, I hadn't heard that bit, but yeah, that sounds great.
I think that's...
it does sound plausible, to be quite frank.
I think that's where the 17 minutes comes from.
Ah, right, okay. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
And the gum disease and heart disease thing, I'd noticed that as well, because there was a friend of ours here who was going to have a heart operation and did have it in the long run, and they insisted on taking all his teeth out first.
Oh, wow. And my mum, going back, I guess it would be 10 years ago, needed a triple bypass valve, and before they would do the operation, she had to go and see her GP and literally have lots of antibiotics to clear up the gum infection that she'd got prior to her having the operation. And what her GP and consultant told her was that if she'd still got a gum infection, then they wouldn't go ahead with the operation, because literally the toxins from the gum infection would go to your heart and literally stop your heart. And the last thing they wanted was her to have heart failure when they're already having to give, you know, a triple bypass valve operation. So I think we've known about that link probably a lot longer than that. You know, it, as you say, in Ayurvedic circles and in complementary therapy forums, we've known about it for some considerable time. But I think, you know, it's quite heartening, I suppose, really, that the NHS have got that information as well.
Yeah. Is it right that the coconut oil's got essential fatty acids and stuff in it as well?
Oh, absolutely. It's so good for just about everything, basically. It's, you know, until a few years ago, it was little used. Everybody would be using either nut or wheat oils, or they'd be using olive oil. So I think it's quite, it's been quite a turnaround for a lot of people to actually use the coconut oil, and I'm really delighted that that's the case. I've recently become a Neil Jard consultant, selling their remedies and personal care products and things, and actually they do a really big tub that's organic. And you know, I've had patients in the past saying, yeah, but it's expensive, and I've said, compared to what? Compared to what? You know, is this really expensive if you're looking after your health in every possible way, that a tub of organic coconut butter, compared to you losing all your teeth or having heart disease, actually it's really cheap at 10 quid a tub. Really, really cheap. So, yes, I think that it's just kind of getting past people's perceptions about, you know, taking care of their own health, when for so many years we've been reliant on the NHS and haven't independently sought remedies and healing for ourselves.
And I think that if you're going to be swilling it around your gums or rubbing it into your skin or whatever it is you're doing, then organic's got to be better than non-organic, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's you don't want toxins to be going into your system when you're using it in such a, you know, a sensitive way, basically, do you? So no.
I've got another query from the chat box from my mate Mahatma Coat. He's saying, any suggestions for childhood eczema and adult hay fever, please?
Wow, yes. I suggest seeing a kinesiologist, particularly a health kinesiologist, because we can actually switch off allergies. So literally all we need is a homeopathic sample or a real sample of the particular grasses or pollen, and we could actually switch the allergies off using COSBATs, which is short for cosmic batteries. And basically what we do for that is the troublesome things that you're allergic to would go on the CV6 Tantien download point, which if you put your finger in your navel and then put two fingers, the other side of it with the other hand, just at the other end of those two fingers is the Tantien download point or the central vessel 6 in acupuncture point. And basically you can download information into that part. Then we put the cosmic batteries on the heart and we say that we're holding all the endpoints, which are your toes, your crown and your fingertips. And literally it releases it from the body at a cellular level. As for the eczema, if you can increase your intake of water, that'll have a really significant effect on it. And also using the organic coconut butter as well, you could put, if it's not weeping and it's not cracked too badly, then you could put one drop of lavender in, or you could put one drop of frankincense in, because frankincense is a cytophylactic, meaning that it's actually a really good, really potent healer for the skin. Lavender's also really good for the skin as well. But if they're cracked or if they're bleeding, just put the coconut butter on as it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's very cleverly brought us onto the subject that I wanted to talk about a bit anyway, which is kinesiology, because it's one of my favourite complementary healing modalities. And I know it's one of your specialities as well. So perhaps you'd like to tell us how it was brought to your attention and then tell us a little bit about how it works.
Yeah, sure. So how it came to my attention was in, I don't know what year it was really, but so it would be 10 years ago because I was going to swim with dolphins for my 50th birthday. For the first time I was going to swim with dolphins. Well, at least this lifetime anyway. And I was very, very excited because I love swimming in the ocean. I love dolphins. I absolutely adore them. And I was going to Southern Ireland in County Kerry to swim with a wild dolphin called Fungi, who's been resident there for possibly 20 or 30 years now. And what happens is the rest of the pod leave at the end of September and Fungi stays there in the bay just because he loves the people that live in Dingle. It is a pretty magical place. So I was really excited about all that, and that was going to be happening in the October. But in the March, I developed this very, very dry mouth, and I knew it was stress-related. And at the time, there was nothing stressful happening to me. So I did some dietary changes in case it was something to do with that, and started thinking about, you know, blessing my water before I drank it, doing all sorts, because literally I was drinking gallons of water. And I wasn't feeling any less thirsty and any less, you know, having this dry mouth. And then Terry and I, because I used to love the Brother Cadfile Chronicles, there's a Brother Cadfile trail. So we chose to do that on Valentine's weekend. So we stayed in Shrewsbury, found this little shop that looked like a herbal remedy shop. And I just said, I'm just going to nip in here and see if they can, you know, if they've got any suggestions about what I might be able to do about this dry mouth. So I went in, the lady did a quick 10-minute consultant and then said, you need to see our kinesiologist. And I said, oh, really? So how does this work then? So she briefly explained to me. And a couple of weeks later, I went in and I met the lovely Ben that you've also met as well. And he did my session for me. And one of the things that came up was that I'd picked up in the womb, as most of us do, not only my mum's nutrients that were keeping me alive, but I also picked up her fears. And the main fear that was affecting me so badly was that she'd got a fear of deep water. So at a conscious level, I was so excited about swimming with dolphins, but at an unconscious level, my body was going, oh my goodness, what are you doing swimming in deep water when you're scared of it? And that it was that incongruity that was causing the dry mouth. So Ben corrected it. And because I come from a, generations of teachers who are also scientists, I phoned my mum up on the night time and said, I've just been and had kinesiology. And one of the things that he said was causing this dry mouth is, you know, your fear of deep water. I didn't know you'd got a fear of deep water. So she told me the story that I'd never heard before, which was that when she was 10, she went to the local swimming pool and she was just coming out of the deep end when a boy jumped off the diving board and just landed on her shoulder and forced her under the water, and she thought she was going to die. So she never went swimming again in deep water, and she ensured, which was quite unusual at the time, that we all learnt to swim when we were 5. And, you know, at the time, that was really quite extraordinary that she was doing that when people didn't usually do that. And she said it was because she knew that if we got into difficulties, she wouldn't be able to dive in and save us. So from that, I realised that I could ask him to sort out whatever my body wanted. So whatever goals and concerns I'd got, I could literally go and see Ben and say, OK, ask my body what it needs to do about this. And I'd get the most unusual but most relevant and beautiful healing, I don't know what you call them, protocols that I've ever had. And I'd had about 3 sessions, and then my lovely husband Terry started going for treatments, and then I took both my kids and I was dragging all my friends and family in, because it was just so brilliant to be able to literally ask your body what it wants to put things right. And I'd had probably 6 sessions, and Ben said, your body's saying that you'd really benefit from becoming a kinesiologist. So we bit the bullet and both of us became, did the training, which took us, I think, about 5 years in total. And then we both became kinesiologists in 2002. And the way that it works is basically, if you imagine that you could literally get in touch with your unconscious mind, which is the one that's driving the bus, not the conscious ego mind, and literally say to it, what do I need to reach optimum health and to feel as relaxed as possible, and have your body answer back? That's the premise of it. And it's all done by gentle muscle testing. We're unusual kinesiologists in that lots of other types of kinesiologists use a very big muscle, and that's not what we do. We use the brachioradialis, which is the very short muscle that goes from your wrist down to your elbow, because we believe that it ties the body too much by extending the arm completely and getting your answers by that. Also, we're quite unusual as health kinesiologists in that we do verbal questioning, which some other forms of kinesiology don't do. But for personal and professional benefits, I don't think there's anything better. And sometimes patients will, they'll phone me up and they'll say, I don't really know what I need, but this is what's happening to me and this is what I'd actually like. And I've said, well, let's just give it a whirl with kinesiology, because even if it isn't that the kinesiology is the treatment that you need per se, it will lead us to the best option for your body and mind and spirit at this precise moment. So that's how it works. But literally, there isn't anything that you could ask your body to put right and it not be able to come up with a solution. So it's difficult to explain as a treatment, because let's say you were coming to me as for aromatherapy massage, I'd say that I was going to do massage moves. I could demonstrate that. I could show you and let you smell the essential oils. But with kinesiology, literally, I've got no idea what your body will ask for. All I know is that it will be something that I've got knowledge of that your body wants. So it's quite difficult to say to people, well, during a kinesiology session, this will happen. It could be self-touch. It could be magnets. It could be crystals. It could be sacred geometry. It could be whatever. And the lovely thing about it is I get such brilliant results all the time, and I'm hugely successful with this treatment because I'm not guessing. Literally, I'm not guessing. I'm getting accurate, verifiable information from your inner pilot.
It really is uncanny, isn't it? I've had I've had a lot of kinesiology in my time, and not just from you. I've had two or three separate kinesiologists. I've had myself trained over a weekend with Ben as well. And even in a weekend, he managed to train us to recognise food allergies and food intolerances, which is where a lot of these difficulties come from, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It really is. And as you said earlier, we do a lot of training at Herbert St. Bliss for GPs and third and fourth year registrars. And I was really shocked when we started doing this approximately 7 years ago, because we went in as a team of two, and we'd already arranged with the person who'd booked us that we were going to teach about hydration, and we were going to teach aromatherapy, Hopi ear candles, and we're going to teach kinesiology as well. And that was the way he wanted it to run, with the third and fourth registrars. And we started the day with saying, so what do you know about hydration? And they said, oh, we know all about input and output. And I went, that's not hydration. That's not hydration. That's just measuring input and output. And when I started to say to them, you know, for hydration recognition purposes, your body does not recognise anything other than good quality, still H2O, as available for hydration. So literally, anything that you have other than that, your body will see as a food. So alcohol, tea, coffee, squash, carbonated drinks of any kind, carbonated water, flavoured water, herbal teas, milk, soup, although they've got high quantities of water in, they don't actually constitute, for hydration purposes, water. And as your body is made out of 80% water, and you're losing fluids via respiration, urination and perspiration during the day, if you're not replacing it with good quality water, then quite often you're experiencing some real difficulties, like feeling really tired in the afternoon, having migraine headaches, having very painful joints. And all of these are symptoms of a lack of hydration.
Yeah. And of course, some of the, I guess some things are better than others, aren't they? I guess herbal teas and stuff like that, at least they don't dehydrate you. But most of the things like alcohol, coffee, tea, Coca-Cola, in fact, any of the soda drinks or pops or whatever we want to call them, they actually increase the amount of water you need to drink, don't they?
Absolutely. And the worst offender of all of those is coffee, because not only does coffee dehydrate you, but it also demineralizes the body as well, which quite often people aren't aware of. And I've got here some conditions that have been shown through research to benefit from a balanced increase of water. So angina is caused by water shortage in the heart-lung axis, arthritis, dehydration in the joint cavities, asthma, drought management programs in the body, autoimmune diseases, back pain caused by water shortages in the spinal column and discs, colitis caused by water shortage in the large gut, diabetes, some cells get only survival rations of water, heartburn is caused by a water shortage in the upper gastrointestinal tract, high blood cholesterol, early drought management by the body, high blood pressure caused by a lack of water to fill blood vessels that diffuse water into vital cells, migraines caused by water shortage in the brain and the eyes, and overall pain. So there's a website. Would you like me to give it to you?
Yes, read it out. I'll put it in the chat box.
Okay, sweetheart. It's www. And then it's all lowercase, watercure.com.
Yeah, okay,
/wondersofwater.html.
Watercure.com/ what was that?
wondersofwater.com.
Yeah.
And then it ends in HTML. And it's got all sorts of really interesting facts about why we should drink more water, why we should drink only water, and why it should be really good quality, not tap water. What it says is that tap water has got chlorine, fluoride, pesticide, insecticides, female hormones in it. The last thing we need is for us to be drinking all of that stuff and taking it into our body when our body's made up of 80% water. You won't be able to rely on your body to reach optimum health if you're not getting good quality water in.
Well, I know you've been trying to encourage me to drink more water. In fact, every time I've seen you for the last 10 or 12 years, and I kept trying after I'd just seen you and then drifting away back to the beer and the coffee again. But eventually I did read a book called Your Body's Many Cries for Water by a guy colloquially known as Dr. Batman. And it really has made a difference to me, because I was suffering from migraine headaches every now and then. They're quite often brought on by the weather when it was particularly close and hot. Once I'd realised that water was part of it, and I thought back to the times when I was having these headaches, I realised that, you know, I'd come home after drinking Coca-Cola all afternoon and doing landscaping in the garden and then leaping into a hot bath with a glass of red wine or something like that. And I could suddenly see that I was obviously really seriously dehydrated. And since I started drinking more water, I no longer get dizzy when I stand up quickly. My lower back pain has more or less gone away. The clicky joints are no longer there. And I haven't, since I started doing this, I haven't had any of the migraine headaches. And interestingly enough, when I took this one to the NHS, the doctor just wrote cluster headaches in pencil on a piece of paper and gave me the piece of paper. Just really useful. And Dr. Batman actually says that if what you're suffering from cannot be traced directly to infection or trauma, then the first thing you should always do is start drinking more water.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had quite a few children that have got acute eczema and asthma. And the twins I'm thinking of were six-year-olds, where they've got bleeding eczema. And their asthma was just dreadful, really difficult. And we got them on a prescription of really good quality water. The mum started drinking willow water and buying it for them prior to them having reverse osmosis system applied to their house. Do you want me to explain what that is?
Yeah, go quickly for the reverse osmosis, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the reverse osmosis means basically that you have a tank fitted to the inlet pipe that comes into the house, and there's 12 filters in it that take out chlorine, fluoride, insecticide, pesticides, heavy metals, female hormones, and Clostridium, which is a bacteria. And then what it does, because it's taken everything out of the water that shouldn't be there, it then goes into another filter tank, which alkalizes the water and then remineralizes it. And the system that we've got is called www.waterfilterman, and it costs us £17 a month to rent the system. And it currently means that I'm bathing in spring water, I'm showering in mineral water, I wash my clothes in mineral water. It's absolutely fantastic for overall health. The willow water is in PCP-free bottles, so very strong plastic. But literally the willow water runs underneath the white willow forest in the Lake District. And people may already know this, but actually we get aspirin, salicylic acid or salicin from white willow trees. So this particular water, because it runs underneath the white willow forest, has got huge amounts of salicin in. But even more importantly, for bone health and bone density, it's got huge amounts of magnesium and calcium, which is really, really good, particularly for females, and particularly for females that have a history in their family of osteoporosis. It's at its most bioavailable to the body. Whereas if you were taking tablets to help with osteoporosis, the body's got to break it up in the digestive system. With this, literally, all you do is drink the water.
Yeah. Can you, we'll have a break for some music in sort of 10 minutes or so, but yeah. can you just describe what you would do if somebody turned up with you with, say, adult hay fever? How would you set about with kinesiology addressing that?
The first thing I'd do is give them loads of water, because the quicker your body can detoxify, the better. And then I would put a homeopathic version of the pollens. We've got mixed pollens as homeopathic versions, so it will literally cover everything from rapeseed to trees to chemical pollens, paper pollen, all sorts of unusual things. We put that on the CV6-10 download point, and then literally put the COSBATs on the heart, and then get the body to release it via the end points. So literally getting your body to let it go at a cellular level. And then after that, we'd retest you to see how you're doing with that. But it may be as well that the reason you're being so badly affected is that there are allergens in the food that you're eating, which are adding to that. So let's say that you've got an allergy to wheat and grasses as hay fever, but you're also eating bread that isn't organic, or you've actually got an allergy to wheat or gluten. It's worth us addressing those things, because they're all part of that complex pattern that your body's having to deal with, and seeing them as aliens. And unfortunately, in the UK, it's very difficult to get organic wheat, because we import it from Canada, and the Canadians have already genetically modified it. And prior to that, the Americans had genetically modified it. And before that, it came from Russia. So the Russians genetically modified it to increase the yield. The Americans genetically modified it to make it grow shorter, so that they didn't need such big combine harvesters to cull it. And then the Canadians added a herbicide to it. So actually, often the reason that people are allergic to wheat and gluten is nothing to do with the original wheat and gluten. It's to do with the genetically modified ingredients in it.
The point is, though, isn't it, that a good kinesiology treatment or a good kinesiology investigation will, from your own inner resources, pick up and correctly identify all of these issues?
Oh, absolutely. Currently, at Heaven Sent Bliss, we test for 777 different allergens, and we'll also test up your personal care kit as well. So it may be that, as well as all the ones we're testing for homeopathically as samples in the way I've just described, but also if you can bring your personal care kit, so your toothpaste, shower gel, shampoo, conditioner, deodorant, antiperspirant, any creams, gels, we can also test those up as well and make sure that there aren't any nasties in that are also overloading the body, so that it's literally chucking the body's immunity system over the edge, which is what's causing the allergies and low tolerances.
And honestly, folks, I know it sounds really weird, but I've personally got years of experience of this kinesiology now, and it works really well. There's something inside you that, when these things are investigated by a kinesiologist, your inner navigator or pilot or whatever you want to call it, knows what's causing the problem. And in the right hands, it is possible not only to identify it, but to actually do something about it. I gather that on occasions it's even possible to deal with anaphylaxis, isn't it? To get rid of allergies.
Oh, absolutely. Really is amazing stuff. And one of the most extraordinary, unusual cases I've had this year is a three-day-old baby that the NHS, the mum and dad took the baby. The mum had got cracked nipples, so she couldn't breastfeed. And within 3 days, the baby was just doing projectile vomiting. They took him into hospital and they kept him for a few hours and said, we think he's probably got a low tolerance to lactose. And so the mum and dad said, so which milk can we give him then that he'll be okay with? And he said, oh, it's just a matter of trial and error. Trial and error with a 3-day-old baby, really? Is that the best we can do? fortunately, they'd had experience of me previously and phoned me up that day and said, okay, Annie, can you test Alfie up and just find out what's going on with his body? And can you also sort out what milk we can get him onto? We got them an appointment the next day. We used the mum's body as the surrogate and got energy permission off the baby for me to work with him and the mum as a surrogate. Literally found out that it wasn't just an allergy to lactose, but it was also to MSG as well. And also we managed to test up from a list that I downloaded off the net about what would be the perfect milk for this baby to be on. And it was organic Nanny's goat's milk with combined with rice stream.
And did it work?
Yeah, beautifully.
Well, before we go for a break, Angel has put in the chat box that it sounds very complicated, but it isn't, is it? It's not necessary for the client to understand the first thing about it. That's one of the great things. You've done all the work.
Yeah.
And basically the system just kind of, it's only really using the client's body as a kind of dowsing system, isn't it?
Absolutely. So basically what happens is typically you'd lie on the couch, I'd wiggle your arm about, verbally question and literally then say what would be the most appropriate thing that we could do for this person right now to reduce their concerns and help them to manifest their dreams into reality. And literally all you do is lie there. You don't need to do anything at all.
And even weirder than that is that you can do it by Skype nowadays, can't you? So you don't even have... that's something that Mahatma might be interested in, actually. Because he's got these problems, perhaps I can put him in touch with you, and you might, because he's a mate of mine, you might consider giving him a bit of a treatment by Skype.
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I've got patients in the USA, Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, and France, as well as up in Scotland.
And Wales, mate, and Wales.
And Wales as well. Sorry, I do apologise. And... these people have never met me before, and I do deliver beautiful, potent treatments all over the world using Skype. Literally, it works just as well done by Skype as it does if you're physically in my presence.
That's right. My kinesiologist, who I saw regularly, moved from Shrewsbury to Scotland, and she was just as effective in Scotland as when I was actually physically travelling by train to see her. Makes it all a lot cheaper and easier for everybody. Look, Annie, I'll put a couple of tunes on so that we can have a quick break, and then we'll come back for a second bite at the cherry, if that's okay with you.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Brilliant. Don't go away. I'll just put a tune on. Let's have that one, yeah. You're back live listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com. That was a song called New Beginnings from the New Beginnings EP by Opaque, one of the bands that I caught at last weekend's or the weekend before's Fire in the Mountain Festival out in West Wales. And before that, my mate Jakey Z from Glastonbury singing his song for the Rebellion. Anybody who's interested in supporting Jakey Z, as far as I can gather, can go to eBay and get a whole CD of his tunes for something like £2. Well worth it, because there's quite a lot of good songs on that. In the meantime, we're back live with Annie Day, the doctor's favourite complimentary therapist. Are you there, Annie?
I certainly am, and I love the description.
That's brilliant. We had a couple of questions came up in the chat box before the last break. The first was whether you've got any comments to make on distilled water and what that's like to drink.
Oh, avoid it like the plague. It's got no life energy in it at all, and it doesn't have health-giving properties. So I say no, avoid it, really avoid it.
What happens if you... if you do the spinning thing as recommended by Schauberger and have a magnet at the bottom of it, and I've also heard that remineralising it by putting a bit of basmati rice or sea salt in it also helps. What do you think of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that's true. I really do think that's true. And I think just spending the time to bless your water before you drink it makes quite a big difference as well. But no, I don't rate that water at all, I have to say. It doesn't have any energy in it, basically, because it's been distilled. So, no, I wouldn't recommend anybody drinking that.
Right, I know that it's a very complex subject on the internet. I've looked into it quite a lot. It's definitely one of those subjects where for every expert there's an equal and opposite expert. It's very difficult.
Oh, sure.
Make any
I
sense.
I just know how I feel after I've drunk distilled water and how I feel when I've drunk, you know, either willow water or reverse osmosis stuff. And it makes such a difference that I'm going by my inner guidance that the fact that it doesn't taste it doesn't taste good to me, and I've tested up as a kinesiologist that energetically it's not particularly good either. So yeah, it isn't one I'd recommend. There are a far nicer, better tasting waters out there with far more therapeutic benefits than that. So yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, if it's been tested using kinesiology and come up as a no-no, then I think I'd take that as a good enough recommendation that the advice is sound to me.
Absolutely, yeah, sure.
The other thing is there was a quick query in there about minerals round joints. It was the question was connected with distilled water, but I know you've got some things to say about how you can release joint pain and stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I suggest that you do if you've got joint pain, it is affected by your body being dehydrated. And, you know, the book that you mentioned earlier by Dr. Bateman is Your Body's Many Cries for Water. And literally, quite often we give our body food when actually what it really wants and really needs is water. So some easy tips for drinking more water is start the day with a glass of water, keep a glass of water near you and sip it often. When you feel thirsty, drink water first. When you're hungry, drink water first. And if you still feel hungry, a short time later, eat some sensible food. Every time you have a stimulant, such as tea, coffee or alcohol, follow it with a glass of water and experiment with drinking warm water instead of tea or coffee. Sometimes people make the mistake of drinking what would seem to be a very good quality water, but they've refrigerated it and made it really cold. If you do that, it will take your body up to 2 hours to get it back up to blood temperature. So let's say that you've had a drink the night before or you've overindulged in some way and you need to hydrate your body really quickly. The best gift you can give your body is to drink half hot and half cold water. So you're literally drinking warm water and it's already at blood temperature. So your body doesn't need to cool it down or heat it up to get it to the right temperature for it. So if you're experiencing any joint pain, I would say give yourself a prescription for water. For most of us, depending on your body type and your body size, the taller and bigger you are, the more water you will need to hydrate you. So they're saying average, which, you know, I've no idea what average means really. but I would say between 1.5 and 2 litres of good quality water every day will actually make a really, really big difference to joint pain, really significantly different pain. Because what happens is the uric acid gets accumulated in the joints, and if you're not drinking plenty of water, then it just gets stuck there and it can't get back out again. So literally by drinking good quality water, at least 1.5 to 2 litres per day, irrespective of anything else that you drink that has water content, you'd find a really big difference in the water. And I did mention earlier that the willow water's actually got salicylin, which is a natural painkiller coming from white willow trees. So maybe if you can access that, I'd go for it. But if not, just drink the best quality water that you can, but not tap water. At least get a filter jug so that you're not your joints aren't locked into the chlorine, fluoride, pesticides, insecticides and the female hormones as well.
Yeah, very good. Comment Flash in the chat box obviously missed the comments we were making about willow water earlier, which you've just reprised a bit. Can you remind us why the plastic bottles that it comes in are not too much of a problem?
Because they don't have any PCP in, so it's very, very strong plastic. The issue with very thin plastic, which lots of other water companies tend to use, is that if the bottle gets warm, then the phytoestrogens will actually go into the bottle, because basically the bottle will remember that it was a sheet of plastic originally and tries to go back into that original format. So if you're going to carry water or take water in the car, let's say, to drink, then your best bet is to get a glass bottle, put your good quality water into that and recycle the plastic bottle, basically. But the best thing you can do, there has been an increase in breast cancer, and it has been linked to these phytoestrogens actually getting into the water. So the last thing you want is that. So yeah, drink really good quality water. And the willow water, as well as being produced and put into very strong plastic, one of the reasons I went with it originally was when they first were commercially operating and making this much better advertised and promoted, they were giving 10% of their international taking to Women's Aid Federation of England, which is for survivors of domestic violence. And at the time, what they were saying was, if you drank willow water for 6 weeks and didn't feel fantastic and your skin health wasn't brilliant, they'd give you money back. And actually, nobody actually got the money back because it works and it does the trick beautifully. So, yeah, I'd certainly have a look at it.
Yeah, can't say fairer than that. I'd also say that it's probably useful if you can get a coloured bottle, because I think the water kept in blue and green bottles is actually energised.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I was really blessed at Christmas because a friend of mine bought me some glass bottles. He knows I'm a colour therapist. And so he bought me magenta, turquoise, yellow and green coloured glass bottles with, stoppers in the top of them. And so literally I make those up fresh every day. And what I tend to do with my patients is to say to them, which colour is grabbing you? Which colour are you really resonating with? And then I'll make sure that's the colour that they drink. And I'll also tell them what the qualities are as well. So, yeah, it's very good to have coloured water.
Yeah, don't have time to go into colour therapy this time round. We'll add it to the list for the next for the next visit. I'd just like to add that from my memories of the Your Body's Many Cries for Water book, is he recommends that you have a couple of 8 to 10 fluid ounce glasses when you get up in the morning, and 8 to 10 fluid ounce glass before you go to bed at night. And then he adds that one about an hour before a meal and one about an hour afterwards, because your body uses a lot of water for digesting food. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly people who present with IBS or any kind of colitis or Crohn's disease, one of the things that comes up very, very frequently is exactly that. You know, make sure that you drink plenty of water in the morning, last thing at night, because it can stop you having a stroke or a heart attack. But also an hour before your meal and an hour afterwards will really help your digestive system to work more appropriately.
Yeah, very good. So I know you've got to leave us about 11:15 this evening, because you've got responsibilities early in the morning. So perhaps can we have a quick chat about reflexology?
Yes, certainly.
How does that work? What do you do with that?
Okay,
it's foot tickling, isn't it?
That could be described as part of it. I'm actually a hand and foot reflexologist, and my degree has aspects of sexual reflexology, which again we've probably not got time to go into. So in Chinese medicine we believe that there is a map of all the internal organs, the whole body, represented on the plantar surface of the feet, which is the sole of the feet, and the dorsum, and that this is replicated on the hands. So literally the palm of the hands is the same as the soles of the feet, and the upper part of the hand is the same as the dorsum on the feet. So basically, if you were looking at a pair of feet now, the very top of the toes is where your scalp and your crown is, and then working down to that first joint, that's where your sinuses are, your upper and lower jaw are. And then working down the body, there are two anomalies in all reflexology. And it is that on the left hand, underneath the fourth finger of the left hand, that's your heart chakra. On your fourth toe, on your left foot, that's your heart chakra. Now, I find it very difficult to believe that that's a coincidence when traditionally that's where we wear our wedding ring, on the fourth finger of our left hand. And the acupuncture point goes from that finger all the way into your heart chakra. So, you know, I don't believe that that's a coincidence. I'm sure that that's evolved because we knew that that was the case.
That's amazingly complicated wiring, isn't it?
Oh, it's just brilliant stuff, isn't it? Really is very, very brilliant stuff. And then the other anomaly is that on your right hand and your right foot is where your liver appears, and it only ever appears on the right-hand side of your body. Because your liver is such an enormous organ, it's actually, if you were looking at your hand now, underneath your little finger, quite a good way across in a fairly circular shape is your liver. And again, on your right foot, underneath your little toe, you've got that really huge organ of the liver. So you've always got, the heart only appears on the left hand and the left foot, underneath the fourth toe and the fourth finger, and the liver appears only on the right hand side, and that's underneath the little finger, little toe, and it's a really huge sort of circular organ, but actually on the right hand and right foot. All the rest of it, there are no other anomalies. Those are the only two anomalies. So your left kidney's on your left side, your right kidney's on your right side, and everything else is in proportion. If you imagine that the whole of your anatomy was photographed and then put next to a picture of your feet, literally the crown of your head corresponds to the top of the toes. Your coccyx corresponds to the spine is represented on the thumb and on the big toe, and then going all the way down the body. So literally that's where your spine is represented.
So can this be so you kind of massage the feet and you get information about the state of the body, do you, from
yes,
this? And
yeah, that's perfectly right. It's remedial as well as diagnostic. So literally, I've had people in the past who've been quite sceptical about how it works, because we don't really have the same understanding in the West as people do in the East about how reflexology works, because they've usually been brought up with it, it's part of their culture. Whereas for many of us, the first time we experience it is perhaps as a complementary therapy treatment. So I had this guy who came to me and was quite rude and said, I'm only here because my wife snagged me, and this is a load of bollocks and it's not going to work. And, you know, he only half filled in the consultation sheet. And I just said, come on, let's just see what we can, you know, your wife's already paid for the treatment, so why don't we just do a good job of it and let's see what we can do to help you to feel better. Because he admitted that he was really stressed out and really feeling quite vulnerable. So literally I started massaging his feet, and I realised straight away that there was quite an anomaly in the heart chakra, and there was a lot of hard skin on the heart as well, which is often protective because we've been through severe traumas. So I just said, I have no intention of alarming you, but I do think you should go and see your GP, because there's quite, you've got something wrong with your heart, and it's been quite long standing. And he went, oh my God, that's really spooky. And I said, why? He said, I was born with it. It was a congenital heart defect. And because I've had it since I was a baby and I just take my medication every day, I never even think about it. And after that, he was my best advert, because he hadn't filled in the form properly. And clearly I'd picked that up despite his reticence to engage with the process. So often people say to me, you've got to believe in it. And actually I'd say, no, you don't.
Yeah. And basically you've had that kind of experience on a more or less daily basis, haven't you? And it means that these modalities, as it were, they not only, in my opinion, work for diagnosis and treatment, but they've also got very cunning ways of proving to these cynics that come along to your come along to Heaven Sent Bliss that actually you have got something useful to say.
Absolutely. And I love skeptics. I really love a challenge. And the skeptics that have found their way to me have ended up being my best adverts. A guy who came for kinesiology probably about 7 years ago, who again said, my wife snagged me and I'm only here because she thinks this is going to work, but I know it's a load of bollocks. And literally, I said the same to him, well, she's paid for the treatment, so let's just give it our best shot and see what we can do. So, the first thing that came up in his kinesiology session was that he'd got needed a scar correction for his left hip. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, because I've just asked your body, and that's what it said, that you've got a, you need a scar correction because you've got a big scar on your left hip. And he said, well, it was when I was 18 and I'm nearly 55 now. And I said, well, there's obviously some reason, either the energy isn't passing through that area or you're not getting enough nutrients to that joint. And he said, well, my hip's been really hurting. So that was the first thing. And he went, oh, it's a fluke. So I said, okay, fair enough, let's crack on then. So we got the next thing. And literally his body threw up a real perler. And he said, oh, my God, I'm really scared now because nobody knows about that except me. Nobody knows about that thing except me. So literally, we got to the end of the session. His body had done all sorts of stuff for his Crohn's disease and all sorts. We went to a networking meeting together a few days later. And the gist of it is that you talk about your business for a minute and everybody gives you referrals and testimonials for each other's businesses. So we got to this meeting. He said, I'm not going to talk about the kinesiology. And I said, I don't care. As long as you're getting great benefits. He was saying, you know, my libido's off the Richter scale. My Crohn's disease is non-existent. And I feel bloody brilliant. I don't think I've ever felt this energetic and so happy. So he said, I'm not going to talk about it today. And I said, I don't care. As long as you're getting the benefits, you know, I really don't mind about anything else. And then he changed his mind. And when he got to the testimonial section, he was really honest. Said, I didn't fill in the consultation sheet properly for her. I was quite rude to her because I really didn't want to be there. Thought it was going to be a waste of time. And actually, I've had extraordinary benefits, feeling so great. And literally, I just spent an hour and a half with her while she wiggled my arm about. So I wanted to change her strapline from, I guarantee if you have a treatment with me, you will experience heaven sent bliss, to, it's bollocks, but it works. And literally, I've had so many male patients as a result of Jonathan's, strap line. And if we go to any meetings, you'll go, shall I do your second strap line for you, babe? I said, yeah, go for it.
I must admit, I agree with you entirely about the skeptics, because when I've been using kinesiology, and I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, it's when I offer, when I seek a volunteer from my audience to come up and be demonstrated on, it's nearly always the most skeptical person in the room, the volunteers, and they nearly always test much better and much more convincingly than anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I mean, one of the things about all of this is that, I have had a series of fairly unfortunate experiences with the Not Healthy Service.
I
used to think that they were at least useful for diagnosis, and I reckon maybe 10 or 15 years ago they were relatively harmless for that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
But nowadays, your GP, if you go to him for almost anything, he'll send you to the hospital, and they're just menaces in there. So I've been wondering what the best way is of diagnosing physical problems that you're aware of, and perhaps reflexology is one of the ones that you could go for, is it?
Yes, certainly. I'd recommend kinesiology would be my first choice, because literally it's like hacking your body's own computer. It's, you know, there's no guesswork involved. It's literally going into your computer and saying, okay, what do I need to reach optimum health? But yet equally, using hand or foot reflexology, because it is diagnostic as well as healing, it's kind of a double whammy with that as well. And that's what you really need to know, what the underlying causes of it, rather than masking it.
Yeah, yeah. And can you use reflexology for treatment as well as diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got patients now that perhaps, well, the person I'm thinking of came because she's got an underactive thyroid. And literally within three treatments, we were able to say, go back to your doctor and just say to him, can you test me up? Because I don't think it's a problem anymore. And the only thing that she'd done differently was every couple of weeks she was coming for reflexology because, you know, she wanted to address it in a more natural way than being on the really horrible medication that she was on that was causing all sorts of really quite unpleasant side effects. So, yeah, I would say that definitely that would be the way to go.
Yeah. And have you tried showing GPs about kinesiology? Because they clearly don't get a lot of time to question their patients and they seem to me to be really basically groping about and not able to come to any conclusions. How does it go with them?
Well, basically, we teach them kinesiology as part of our training days. They need good continuing professional development and we're able to offer it. And again, as you said earlier, the most sceptical people are the best people to demonstrate it on. Because literally, I'd got the last time I did a doctor's tour, I got a guy who was 6'4". And when I actually did the testing, I wasn't using the short muscle. I was using really big muscles, so literally the arm up. And we did all the pre-tests. And then what I did then was we put something that was a known allergen to him. He'd got an allergy to wheat at the time. And literally we just put the wheat on the CV610TN download point, two fingers width below the navel. And this very strong man who I was literally hanging off his arm when he was doing the yes response, we put this tiny homeopathic sample of wheat on the CV6 point, and literally he was so shocked because his arm just dropped to the floor and I was putting, what, 2 pounds of pressure on? And he was, you could see the look in his eye where he was literally going, how on earth has she just done that to me? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was extraordinary for him, but also all the other doctors in the room. I think we'd got about 24 at the time, because literally they were all observing him. And he said, literally, she was just touching me with her fingers and just knocked me over, basically.
That's quite right. And that's why it's so good to have a sceptic up in front of the audience, because it means not only are you convincing them, but everybody in the room can see it happening. And yeah. One of my favourite examples of that was I was at a health fair demonstrating the geometry and the kinesiology, and I had a Gurkha turn up from Brecon because they were just down the road from this place.
Oh, right.
And he wasn't very tall. He was slightly shorter than I am, but he had arms like tractors. He's very, very strong. So like you, rather than using the short muscle, I got him to hold his arm out straight. Yeah. And I decided to test his what we call his fire circuit, which is in the perineum. Yeah. And I got him to look at a candle and I tested his arm. And like you, I could have done chin-ups on it. I really could. He was so strong. And then I got him to just look away from the candle and look up at the roof of the building we were in. And the same thing happened to him. This massively strong, militarily trained muscle just gave way and his arm collapsed and his hand slapped against his thigh. And I love that moment when they look at you with eyes like soup plates, like you're some kind of sorcerer or a witch or something. Which I suppose, technically speaking, we are, aren't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah. What would you, if you were to pick sort of one or two of your memories of your complementary practice for thinking, well, that really was quite remarkable. What would you select to talk about?
Let me think. I think a lady who'd kind of been put off completely by the NHS. She'd had 3 shots at IVF, which didn't work and was very, very expensive. And then came to me as a last resort before the clock completely stopped and it was impractical for her to conceive. And she had 3 treatments and conceived.
Really? And what were you treating her with?
Kinesiology. And the first thing we did was we did a massive detox. So we did allergy corrections and she had an ionic detox foot spa. And then I think she had to go away and sort of clear out all the cleaning products that she was using as well, because they were having an impact on her, because she was breathing in these very noxious fumes, which wasn't good for her. And then changing to clean water. The second session, we did more subtle stuff. And then the third session, we did this thing where we had to put ice on her ovaries, which just stimulates the body's healing, basically, and basically attracts the attention of the whole system and says, okay, where the ice is, that's where we want all the lymphocytes. That's where we want, you know, all the best stuff going to. This is really important. And literally, when she came for the following treatment, she was pregnant.
Wow. Because when you think about how long that can take, with the IVF and the rest of it, and it's by no means a guaranteed result, is it?
No, not even remotely, no.
And did she have one baby or six?
Oh, no, she's had one baby and then quit.
Well, that's the other risk, isn't it, with the IVF? Because of the way they do it, you stand a fair chance of having two or three babies when they do come along instead of just one.
Yeah, and then it's going to be more problematic to cope with as well, isn't it, you know? Mm. So, that was quite extraordinary. It really was amazing. I was so delighted for them as well. After all the expense and all the pain, and the heartache from her not, you know, having conceived with the NHS process, and then literally having three gentle, quite easy to deliver, simple kinesiology sessions, and she'd got the baby that they'd always dreamed of. So, you know, it does far more than just work on the physicality, which I think is where the NHS goes wrong. We talked about Louise Hay and you know, metaphysical healing, and I think the bits that missing the most is that the NHS doesn't look at the mind, body and spirit connection, and we do.
Yeah, indeed. The ice on the ovaries trick, is that why ice on bruising and injuries and stuff works? Is that having that effect?
Any time that you injure yourself, if you get an ice pack and just wrap a tea towel around it so you don't get ice burn, but literally put it on, and then if you can leave it on for 10 minutes, and I know it's not the most pleasant sensation because it's cold, but literally it sends out this signal to the lymphocytes to go and do some significant healing and very profound healing. If then you, let's say you've sprained something or you badly bruised it, if you put a hot water bottle on for 10 minutes and then go back to the ice, and do that a couple of times and switch it over, makes a magnificent difference to it.
That's interesting. That reminds me of something you were telling me the other day about tears as well, about salt water on the face. You said that has a similar sort of effect.
Oh, absolutely. The chemical composition of our tears, the amniotic fluid in which we grew, our blood and the ocean have exactly the same composition. Literally, irrespective of how you're crying, whether it's because you're sad or you're laughing and you produce tears of laughter, or the wind catches your eyes, which it does sometimes, and the tears fall, or you sneeze or you cough and the tears come out. The tears have got oxytocin in. As soon as the oxytocin touches your skin, it sends up a physiological response to the whole body that says, start the healing now. And, you know, for years we've said, I feel so much better when I've had a good cry. And, you know, finding out, I think it was in the New Scientist, they had the article on it. Literally reading this article, I was just like a big penny dropped. And that would explain why we feel so great when we've had a good cry. Because literally the oxytocin, as soon as one drop touches the skin, it sets up that healing response, which is enormously powerful. Just a brilliant one.
Absolutely amazing. And of course, it's not only our blood and our tears that share the nature of the seawater. It's apparently all of our DNA is surrounded by a tiny bath of salt water, which is also similarly construed.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that would make sense.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's like the universe came up with a good solution for something and then has come up with many, many applications.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's worth commenting as well on the old cleaning products under the sink thing. Everybody's basically got this whole cupboard full of poisons in their kitchen, haven't they?
Absolutely. And what often comes up in people's allergy tests is things that they're using, like oven cleaner, which are just so noxious. Bath cleaners that give off horrible, horrible fumes. So I'd recommend that if you can't make your own from aromatherapy oils, which I'd recommend you to do, I would suggest that get EcoVare or similar products that don't have an impact on your health and also don't have an impact on the earth. So one of the best oven cleaners I've ever come up with is literally just getting Atlantic sea salt and then adding sweet orange, grapefruit, rosemary, lemongrass, lemon, lime, all the citrus fruits, and then literally putting a couple of drops of those and then covering the whole of the oven in it and the top of the cooker, and then just go off for a couple of hours. And when you come off, literally, you'll just be able to brush all that off and the whole of your house smells lovely. Whereas if you do it with commercially produced oven cleaners, the whole house smells of this really noxious stuff that will make you cough and your eyes stream. So, yeah, it's a kind of a no-brainer, really, isn't it, to make sure that what we're breathing in our homes is as healthy as everything else that we're doing. Often we're eating organic food, we're drinking good quality water, we're doing all the right things exercise-wise. But if we're using these toxic chemicals in our homes, then we're actually breathing them in. And again, our skin is that one of our biggest organs of respiration as well. So the last thing you want is this to go on your skin, and the last thing you want is for you to be breathing it in as well.
And of course, with the oven cleaners, the residue remains on the oven, and then you're going to be cooking food in there.
Absolutely. That's just, you know, it's incredibly silly to be doing that, isn't it? It doesn't make any sense at all that we'd use something like that that is giving off noxious gases and then put our lovely food into it, you know, whatever, you know, roasting tin or whatever you're putting them into, and then to have all those chemicals still in the confined space is just ridiculously bad practice, isn't it?
It's like I say, anybody would think that the manufacturers of these things had it in for us.
Who'd have thought it?
We've got 3 or 4 minutes of your time left, so let's go to my favourite device at your place, which is the famous Ionic Foot Detox Bath. You want to give us a quick description of that, and then I'll tell them about my experience of it.
Yeah, sure. So basically what happens is that this is, it looks like an ordinary foot spa, you know, the bubbly ones that people have seen previously, but this is different. So basically you fill the bowl up, if you like, or the foot bath up with warm water, good quality water, and then you add it's got to be blood temperature at least, so it's warm water's best. You add Atlantic sea salt to it, and then the system runs a mild electric current through an array that goes in the center of it, and you basically just place your feet in it. It's very pleasant. You don't feel the electric current at all. It is a very mild one. But what it does is it actually agitates and rubs and vibrates the cells together. We release toxins from the sole of our feet anyway. So what this system does is it just maximises the potential for detoxifying the whole body. So basically you put your feet into this salt bath, and with lovely warm water, and we run a mild electric current. And literally, you'll see the water's very, very clear. And quite often by the end of the, it takes about 20 to 25 minutes to go through the complete cycle. And it's very necessary for you to drink water whilst the treatment's going on and for the remainder of the day to make sure that you don't get a headache. But literally, it will look really, really murky. It will look like, I don't know, Bovril by the time it's finished the cycle. And I had a clairvoyant that used it a few days ago, just because she was curious. And she told me, and I trust her completely, that not only does it detoxify physically, but it does so emotionally, psychologically and spiritually.
Well, I reckon for me, it must, because as you know, there are so many poisons. No matter how much we get rid of the Glade and the air fresheners and the cleaning yeah. products and the shampoo and all that kind of gub, there's still loads of stuff being poured into the food and into the atmosphere.
Oh, so absolutely.
I've taken the approach that that detoxing regularly, possibly every day, is a good way of doing it, which is one of the yeah. reasons why I do the oil pulling that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, but absolutely.
I remember my first encounter with your detox foot bath, and I watched Synchro have a go with it, and she's obviously a very, very pure entity, because by the time she'd finished, the water was a kind of a gentle golden colour. And within 5 minutes of me putting my feet in this thing, it already looked like Bovril. I still had 20 minutes to go or something. And then it developed this horrendous scum on the top of it after about 10 minutes. And I really didn't want to leave my own feet in there anymore. And I remember it took, after about 3 or 4 treatments, I too was turning out this kind of lightly golden water. So, yeah. like I say, God knows what sort of, it must have sucked loads of shite out of my body. It's all those bad habits I had for all of those years. That's what it is.
Surely not.
I'm looking forward to coming up shortly and having another go on that, because I've probably taken on board a lot more stuff since then. It'd be interesting to see how it goes.
And I'm also delighted that you're coming up to the Midlands to share your expertise and your very loving way of delivering this beautiful ceremony of original innocence, and the talk on the Friday night as well. And it will be a Saturday and Sunday, and I'm so looking forward to it. Every time you come and deliver it here, it's even better than the last time. And I always think, yeah, you won't be able to do anything better than last time. And then you always surprise me by beautifully showing me that that's not the case. And you've always got, I'm not sure if you've changed the talks in between, which I guess it does evolve and grow and develop. But I think also things that may not have been relevant the last time I heard them are actually really piqued my interest, and they resonate with me far more. So I know every time you've delivered it, I think I've done, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 of these now. I've always got the maximum benefits and hugely enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's been wonderful.
Well, I put that down purely and simply to the quality of the system and the information we're using there.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it myself as well. And like I say, being as you're skiving off early, I'll give them the benefit of, I'll talk to them a little bit about that, because it is more or less along the same lines. And we will end up talking about what I do with kinesiology.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm aware the time has come for you to retire for the evening, Annie. I'd like to thank you very, very much for joining us. It's clear that the chat box has been pretty well engaged with what you've been saying throughout. So thanks a lot for coming on and chatting with us. Would you consider coming on and dealing with the other 2/3 of the stuff that we were going to talk about on another show?
Yes, certainly. I'd be absolutely delighted to do that. It's always good to talk to you.
Well, that'd be really good. Don't go away, because I'll have a chat with you in a moment. But Tom Ewing's put in a request for some real music. He says he wants some real punk rock. So this is for Tom. We're going to kick off with Art School by The Jam. Thanks, Annie.
Okay.
This is Dr. Rock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com, and I've been talking tonight with Annie Day, who will be along again on the show, because we had many other things that she can do to talk about. If people in the chat box are okay with that, give me a shout, let me know, and we'll book her for another session. That last tune was Black Magic Woman, going out to Annie Day, who is, of course, a white magic woman, strictly speaking. Before that, Smiling Ivy and Efficient Waste of Time. And before that, Stiff Little Fingers, Barbed Wire Love, and Art School from The Jam for Tom in the chat box. Thanks very much for requesting them. There'll be a bit more of the hairy stuff coming up after this next little bit of chat, because I might as well talk a little bit about the stuff that Annie was referring to, the weirder end of Dr. Rock's work, really. It was some time ago now, maybe certainly over 15 years ago, that I came across a couple of people called Juliet and Jeeva Carter, who'd come up with a thing called the Ceremony of Original Innocence. I was much less aware of almost everything in those days than I am now. And the introduction that Juliet gave to this particular technology, because that's what it really is, absolutely made all of my hair stand on end. I was riveted for the 90 minutes she sat there talking without notes about this system. And I realised straight away that most of what she was saying I had just been waiting to hear for so long. And it was very odd, a lot of it. There were some points in her talk when I thought, you, my dear, are completely barking. But then the very next sentence she said let me know why it was she'd said what she said. The basic premise of the thing is that the human being has within it a set of electromagnetic circuits which have become disconnected for various reasons, and that they could be reconnected by using geometry, really. And the first ceremony deals with a bunch of forms that are called the Platonic forms. There's five of them. They're the five ways of dividing a sphere into equal portions. There's a tetrahedron, which divides it into four triangles, an octahedron, which divides it into eight triangles, the icosahedron, which divides it into 20 triangles, and the other two are a cube, which divides a sphere into six squares, and a dodecahedron, which divides it into 12 pentagons. And the basic idea of this system is that these 12 circuits are related to these five pieces of geometry. The fire circuit, which I referred to earlier with reference to the Gurkha that turned up at the healing fair that I was at. The fire circuit, the test point for kinesiology, is situated in the perineum, which is basically, for boys, it's between the balls and the bum, and for girls, it's between the fanny and the bum. I still haven't found a nice way of putting that, but it normally gets a bit of a laugh. And the trick is that if you put three fingers on your perineum and just look into space and have somebody do a kinesiology test on you, your arm will go really weak, just like the Gurkhas did. But curiously, if you look at a tetrahedron, your arm will go solid and stiff again. And then you look away and the muscle will just collapse once more. The funny thing is that Plato connected the tetrahedron with fire, and fire is the name of this particular circuit. So if you look at a candle flame, once again, you will get a positive, strong response from your muscle. Look away from the candle flame, and you will get a weak response. Now, it was in pursuing these investigations that I actually got myself trained as a kinesiologist, because I was getting into a bit of trouble with kinesiologists when I was talking about the geometry and talking about the ceremony. The other circuits work in a similar way. The earth circuit is in the middle of the back of the head. It's about three finger widths above the soft bit where the spine goes into the back of the head. And the earth circuit is reconnected, i.e. you get a strong response when you're looking at either a cube or an earth crystal. Now, there's one of the strange things, because you can show people who don't know anything about crystals, you can show them iron pyrites and it will strengthen the earth circuit. You can show them a diamond and it will strengthen the earth circuit, or indeed any earth stone, at any earth crystal at all. But if you show them a piece of moldavite, they get a weak response again, i.e. the moldavite does not strengthen the earth circuit. And even if they don't know what moldavite is, this always works in the test. And the thing is that moldavite comes from somewhere else. I think the orthodox theory is that at some point a meteorite that came from Mars struck the Earth somewhere, I believe, in what is now the Czech Republic, and it mixed with a load of sand to form a kind of green and glassy-looking stone. It's pretty strange looking object. And so because it doesn't come from Earth, it doesn't reconnect the Earth circuit. Now, that was one of the first things that really alerted me to the fact that kinesiology was an odd and real phenomenon, if you like. The other thing is that Plato connected the cube, which strengthens the Earth circuit, with the element of Earth. So somehow Plato, or Pythagoras, who was the guy who informed Plato, really, because Pythagoras didn't write things down and Plato did, which is how come these things got attributed to Plato rather than Pythagoras. The other three elements that we're dealing with when we talk about the geometries I mentioned earlier are the icosahedron, the one that's made up of 20 triangles, was associated by Plato with water, and it's reconnected, i.e. you get a strong response when you look at either an icosahedron or when, curiously, you look at your own eyes in a mirror. Very, very strange, that one. The air circuits, there's four of those. They're the throat, the third eye, the crown, and the auric circuit. The auric circuit's about a hand's width above the middle of your head, which is where the crown is. And these ones are strengthened by looking at an octahedron, or once again, by looking at your own eyes in a mirror. And the final one is ether, and the ether circuits are in the heart, the solar plexus, and the tip of the pubic bone. And that particular circuit is strengthened by looking at either a dodecahedron, or once again, it's pretty odd, by closing your eyes and looking at your own internal sun. Now, we've been doing this work now for 15 years. We travel around the country wherever people can get six or eight people together. And we do the introduction and we show people using a volunteer. As I said, the first thing we do is ask for a volunteer to come forward from whoever it is that's listening, to stand in front of everybody else so that we can show them the kinesiology working with the various props, with the crystals and the candles and the geometry and the mirror and all of that. And as I said to Annie, most often, not only when we're doing it, but when other people who do this work are doing it as well, the individual that will volunteer to come up and be the demonstrator, if you like, for the rest of the group has made themselves quite clearly apparent to be the most sceptical person in the room. And strangely enough, they are the people that you really want there, because for some reason, these things work even better on sceptics than they do on the people who actually expect it to work. I've got no explanation for that at all. During the lunch break, what we do is we go around and we test all 12 circuits on everybody who's going to be doing the ceremony. We show them that the circuits are disconnected, i.e. that they're going to get a weak response when we test them kinesiologically. And then we show them that using the various props, we can make this circuit strong, and we can get a strong kinesiological response from them. Now, a couple of very odd things about this is that in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, we do a spoken ceremony, and we have in the middle of the room various earth crystals. Everybody's got their own mirror. We have candles. And nowadays, we also hang up the geometry above the centrepiece so people can look at that as well if they want to. And a combination of looking at the various props and speaking very beautiful words, it's a lovely little ceremony, results in these circuits being permanently reconnected, and they result in a much, much stronger response from your inner navigator than using the props. And they're reconnected permanently. I've been able to tell when I've met people in various festivals and stuff who've done various of the template ceremonies, just exactly how many ceremonies they've been through by working my way through all the circuits. And I can tell from when I get a weak response what the last ceremony was that they did. Now, all of that is odd enough, but a bit like the fact that Annie can do kinesiology over Skype, or that my old kinesiologist can work on me from the furthest reaches of Scotland, is the fact that you can reconnect circuits in people by surrogacy, which means that if you come along to a ceremony and you want to reconnect the circuits of, say, your mother or your father or your siblings or anybody with whom you've had a child or people with whom you have a live sexual relationship, then their circuits will get reconnected even though they're not at the ceremony. And another very weird experience is that you don't actually have to be awake when this is happening. So we did one round at Annie's place, actually, where Synchro and I had rounded up a bunch of people from festivals during the summer, and we told them that we were going to be doing this work at Penkridge on a given date. And much to my surprise, 7 or 8 of them turned up, and they were a right rogue mixture of assorted freemen, reprobates, and other unusual people. And one of them had had a very, very hard night the night before the ceremony. He was in a pretty dreadful state, and he slept through the whole of the presentation, the whole of the introduction, because I use the same introduction that Juliet Carter used with us all that time ago. He slept through all of that. He woke up for some lunch and to have his circuits tested, and then he slept through the whole ceremony as well. And he was the last thing we do before everybody leaves at the end of the day is we test everybody's circuits again to show them that where once there was weakness, there is now strength. And in fact, the guy that had slept through it tested just as strong as all the people who'd sat there and said the words, looked at the geometry and the candles and all of that. And I remember him eyeballing me and saying, we are going to have a serious talk about the mechanics that are involved here. And I kind of agreed with him. We never had a chance to talk about it, unfortunately, but it's a very strange experience. We've been doing the work for a long time, and the kinesiology, even after the training, even after all the practice I've had, even after working with four very, very good kinesiologists myself, it still rather weirds me out. Still, when I get to the bit in the day when I've got to do the muscle testing, I get a little bit nervous. And I don't know why that happens, because it has never failed for me or for any of the other people who are doing these template ceremonies. So we are now going to be, during the summer, I suspect we're going to be going out and doing the ceremonies in two or three places. We're very keen to do it for people, because two of the main effects that occur again and again in people after this ceremony is a marked reduction in fear levels, which of course is one of the things that we all recognise here, don't we, as a precursor, an absolute necessary point to making progress in this rather savage and fraudulent world in which we live. The other thing it does, apart from reducing fear levels, is it tends to reorganise power distribution in personal relationships. This means that after the ceremony, people whose relationships are, say, codependent and which house a lot of denial will cease to be like that. They will start either moving towards the co-creative and strengthening the relationship, or the relationship itself will dissolve. And in my experience, it doesn't only work with personal relationships in that sort of line. It also works with all your personal relationships. So your relationships with your parents, your relationships with your siblings, your relationships with the people at work, with the result that people who are affected quickly by this particular technology tend to leave their jobs pretty quickly. Doesn't happen to everybody by any means. And the way it unfolds with people depends very much on the situation they find themselves in. So if they're going back to a home where they don't want to be, if they're going back to a job they don't want to do, and many, many other variables affect it, then the effect of the ceremonies will unfold more slowly in those people than it will in people who are living a strong and happy life where they're actually free to do what they please without upsetting other people and without having to take any flack therefrom, shall we say. So that's how I got involved in kinesiology. I'm still using it on a yearly basis. I still get regular kinesiological treatments. In fact, I'm currently undergoing another set of sessions with Annie, and we're dealing with very subtle things nowadays, because a lot of the major challenges I had have been sorted out. But life takes its toll on all of us. We get new physical challenges, we get new mental challenges, we develop new allergies, we find that as we get strong in one sense, we get weaker in another. And really, all of these things, it is worth finding yourself a good kinesiologist, because at least you'll be able to identify the problems and then do something about it. 9 times out of 10, in my experience, the kinesiology can sort it out as well as identify it. So I think that they managed to clear up something like 70% of the food allergies that are presented to them. And when people are suffering from things like hay fever, from asthma, from eczema, from all sorts of things that can arise as a result of an allergy, this is an extremely useful and valid technique to be using. And like I say, if you've got anything that you fancy investigating, then personally, I would take it to a kinesiologist rather than a GP. So I was hoping that Annie was going to be with us for the whole show, but as I say, real life intervened there a little bit. We'll have her back on the show. I'm going to be playing some tunes for the next 15 minutes or so, and then I'll come back to you before the end of the show.